Well, actually, when fair is fair, it goes across party lines. So it's not like you're allowing certain amendments to go in with your own party and disallowing other amendments. It was just we were in a free fall situation. And I think everybody understood that. And as a matter of fact, since I have been up there, I think this is the first time that we had to cut House Bill 2 as it came over. There's kind of an unwritten rule that as the House puts their budget together, the budget together, that it comes over, and then we have allowances for a little bit more money over in the Senate. So we don't touch their stuff, they don't touch our stuff. But this time, the difference in this budget from this time to our last recession in 2007, 2008 is that we were actually in free fall as we were coming into session. So even as late as December, there was still some denial about how bad gas and oil prices were going to be and what types of consequences that was going to have, even for gross receipts tax, not to mention just, the whole shrinkage of money coming in to support state government. So this time, we had two or three different economic experts coming in for their input when we were in session. And so that makes it entirely different. And I had amendments myself, everybody had amendments. And since I have been up there, I have never seen partisan playing into the amendment process, at least in the Senate Finance Committee. I can't speak for the House. I've never served in the House. But so I love being in the Senate because we are so less partisan in the Senate. And certainly under the leadership of Senator John Arthur Smith, it just is a very mutually respectful process.
Okay. But you always have certain things that you are going for in terms of school or children or health. You have special things that you want to see funded and taken care of, and so that must have been hard.
Well, except that those are statewide projects. They're not little projects for me and my little isolated district. So, for instance, consideration of more money for upgrading the quality of childcare providers is extremely important. I've always been a big defender and, I guess, marching soldier for the public federally qualified primary health care facilities, and they always get rated, and they once again were rated this year. And so I'm always pointing out, no matter if you say that we have more people in Medicaid and is paying for the public health care facilities, yes, but that little whisper is that people that are in the state illegally are not covered under Medicaid. And that is an enormous population, and they go to the federally qualified primary health care facilities, of which those places get nothing except for any volunteer payment. And so they are incredibly important, especially in a rural state like New Mexico, where you're not going to have the big infrastructure of the HMOs that have doctor offices all around and dentist offices and even hospitals. So, yes, I am their defender, and I once again defended them. And I even actually passed a bill that got into House Bill 2 that had to do with extending K3 plus, which is the extended year from kindergarten through primary, to do a pilot program for K5 plus, meaning that those same children that got the advances of having extra school time during the summer, and it's always at risk considered or DNF school. So it's not open to everybody, but it's open to the kids that most need these types of extra programs, that we would have up to 20 schools that would bid for participation in that program to go all the way through the fifth grade. And of course, the reason I was so passionate about it is most of the problems are when you get into middle school that they really have lost a lot of what they got in their early years. And so that you would have that continuum of services in hopes that they feel really good and excited about getting into middle school. And by the way, yes, I feel just as smart as everybody else getting into middle school. And I think that that is not the only way, but a major way to start moving this barge around for getting our poorest children to stay in school, to not drop out and not get into teenage pregnancy issues, which dropping out and all these things causes poverty and many times drugs and a life of crime and things that we are really dealing with. So to deal with those complicated issues after the fact is most of the time very, very unfulfilling. To me, after I studied things for all these years, that's when I decided to really start looking at the earliest way that you can catch these little tiny babies, toddlers, and preschool kids, and then move them up the ladder with special attention to quality programs.
Okay. How are you feeling about the budget now? Do you think that it's going to work? The agencies are going to have to cut in the year that we're in, as well as have a flat budget for next year. Do you think we'll get along that way?
Well, first of all, the agencies are not going to cut FTEs. That's the one thing that the Finance Committee has been very proud of. We've never had any state layoffs of public employees, nor one teacher layoff. So we have cut through other mechanisms. The Finance Committee has always been very proud of the fact that we find savings where there is extra money. A lot of gossip has been kind of whispered about us shaving fund balances and so on. Well, if there are fund balances, that means that they're unspent. Do we like to do that? No. And unfortunately, it's a one-time money capture. Mm-hmm. So we have to make sure that in subsequent years, if our budget does not rebound, that we have the ability to really find money in other ways.
Mm-hmm. Were the Republicans on Senate Finance in contact with the governor's office at all? Did you have people working with you to let you know what the governor was looking for, or what she wouldn't veto, or and things like that?
We don't have as much contact with the governor as I think maybe the House does. I can't speak for the House, and yes, we had some contact, but it was not a dictatorial type of conversation where she demanded this and demanded that and so on. And so our Senate Finance Committee has been pretty independent. We're very proud of it, and it's a very cohesive type of committee where we really talk as a very small group. The House Appropriation is a very large committee. The Senate Finance Committee is very cohesive and very small. And we are not always 100% in agreement with voting on bills that come through and that sort of thing, but we get along pretty well.
You announced during the session that you weren't going to run again, and there was a very nice tribute to you that other senators did on the floor, but they sort of talk about how nice it was to work with you. I think they missed how important you are on Senate Finance and how you have the institutional memory. And I thought that they really kind of missed what a hole there would be when you leave.
Well, that's an interesting point. And certainly Senator John Arthur Smith spoke highly of my participation on Senate Finance. And I think that there was one other person that spoke about the way that I always shed light on the importance of funding these early programs and so on. And I do respect what I did on Senate Finance, but I did have 20 years of a whole array of bills that I did and working with my colleagues on both sides of the fence, and I hope what maybe came through is I am not a strict partisan person, and a lot, I think, of my success was just that. I kept my nose out of a lot of issues that were really partisan and really not the issues I was dealing with, and really spent my time trying to understand how we could improve the state, how we could, as I mentioned earlier, how we could really get more money into these early programs, but also the business community. The private business community is really what is important in terms of tax money that comes in to fund state government. And we heard a long time ago from Senator Pete Domenici that we better stop depending on the national labs because he warned us that they were going to be shrinking their money, and fortunately they haven't collapsed. We have never lost a base, a military base or anything. But I think his message was extremely important, that our economy needed to become more broad-based. And so that's why I've been very committed to the tax structure that is in the state of New Mexico, and I've sponsored many of the bills that supported that. And as you mentioned, the Republicans on the Senate Finance Committee, except for Senator Lavelle, really are newer members, so they really didn't know about my early programs that I really pushed all the way back, because I've been on that committee for, I think, about 18 years. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I have a long history before they came in.
Do you worry about things going wrong after you?
You know, as much as you think, gee, I'm irreplaceable, which I've never had that false thought, as much as you feel that your niche is not going to be replaced, that really is a falsehood. There's so much talent in an elected official. And I really love the variance of the different areas of expertise that have been on the Senate Finance Committee. And as a matter of fact, this very session, I watched a couple other senators pick up some of my issues, such as the money for TEACH, TEACH, which is not the K-12 TEACH, it's the early childhood TEACH. Just some of the childhood things, and you know, Senator Sapien has really established a niche in early childhood and so on. And so Senator Carlos Cisneros is going to surprise you. He has, you know, major seniority and prominence on the Senate Finance Committee, and he has picked up the issue of the primary health care facilities that I mentioned, because he has so many of them in his district. Mm-hmm. And so I am under no false premise that I'm irreplaceable, and yet I'm very happy with things that I did. And yes, I can remember some specific issues, one in particular that talks about, well, why are we giving all these tax breaks to corporations when what we should be talking about is the small mom and pop issues? And it's a young senator, and I've established a great relationship with him, but I felt like saying, hey, young man, but I didn't say that. But I said, you know, you were not here when we lowered the personal income tax from 8.5 to 8.2, and then it graduated all the way down to where it is at 4.9. And I said, guess what? That's the small businesses that are not incorporated. So if you are a small business and you file a personal income tax, a PIT, then you got a break of almost a half of your tax rate. And that ended that. Another time that you may have been in the audience when it came up again in a different situation about, well, I don't think legislators should have a pension. And of course, everybody's extremely nervous about talking about, oh, should we be, you know, get more money for per diem or paid or pensions or whatever? And there was this dead silence on Senate Finance. And this is long before I thought about retiring. And I said, you know what? I've been up here for, at that time, it may have been 15 years, and I've served with no money except for per diem to pay me back for my travel expenses and lodging and food. And I said, the only thing that you get for serving for all these years is a very minimal pension that is only set on your per diem rate. It's not set for the high salaries that people get when they are employees of government. In no way am I in any way ashamed of the pension that I get or I will get at some point. And in fact, I've earned it. And I mean, that was the end of that. And other people chimed in after that. But it took someone as senior as me to say, you know what, if the press is here and they don't like what I have to say, I don't even care, because this is the way I feel. And I'm really speaking for all of the legislators that are afraid to get up here and say, yes, I want my pension.
So do you feel that you've kind of passed the torch and that the issues that you really care about have champions who are going to be taking them over? And will you be contacting them and saying, don't forget such and such?
Certainly, I have no intentions of going back in any official capacity, such as a lobbyist or anything of that nature. And I really don't intend to really be up there to, you know, remind people about what they should do and so on. And I do feel very proud that I did bring light to a lot of issues, but it wasn't only me. For instance, Max Call was a big proponent of after-school activities and early childhood and things, and former state rep Dennis Picrow. So I wasn't the only person that thought of these things and that brought them up. So I don't take full credit. Yes, they've been gone for a while, and I then became just about the only person up there. But I think that a lot of people have learned about them and are going to, you know, go through their time up there and fulfill those needs, because I think that we're going to start seeing pretty quickly the first batch of children that were home visited, and the PIT, the parent infant toddler programs, and then the pre-Ks or the child care that used to be babysitting. Everybody admits it. I can remember when we did the full day kindergarten that there were certain people saying, well, they just want their kids to be babysat. And I thought to myself, you know, these people are embarrassing themselves by talking about that, because we knew that it wasn't going to be strictly babysitting. Mm-hmm. And
well, we women knew.
And we and some of the very people that were against it ended up then wanting their kids in those programs. And there was a hush after that of any criticism of full-day kindergarten or pre-K. And you'll recall pre-K was very bipartisan program. And yes, I think that I probably pushed my colleagues on my side of the aisle towards some of those programs. But we are starting to reap the benefits.
So we'll be able to know that that worked and that there's been a difference.
And one of the things that I was not successful with that I really hope will come about with some of my younger colleagues is the after-school programs. And a lot of it has to do with the funding. With mothers working, mothers work now. So both parents work now. And I use mothers. I mean, it could be the stay-at-home dad. But the fact is that after-school activities are very important, especially for our poorest children. Mm-hmm. I just hope that that really will materialize as across the board. I did a very limited funding program with Pamela Herndon, and she and I put together a group that, and we came up with a little niche of money that I found in a corner someplace, and we applied for it, and it allowed girls to have after-school sports programs. So we bought them uniforms, we paid for, you know, the bus services and so on, and we just had great results. So, you know, that is something that I think is going to be a necessity of funding issues as we end up getting more stable with our economy.
Are you able to look back and say, pick out one area that you are especially proud of that you worked in?
Well, I've been talking about it the whole interview. Early in my career, I did sponsor the water banking issue, and I got very much into drip farming. And those were very stubborn issues. I have really spent a whole lot of time in this interview talking about my early childhood program. And the other area has been the ECHO program that has to do with internet telemedicine and being able to go into the small towns and have UNM specialists that advise the general practitioners, and actually now it's going into nursing and even CNAs and so on, to be able to get into continuum of practices. But we know that realistically speaking, a small rural community is not going to have specialists. Mm-hmm. We have a big problem with drug dependencies, but they're not going to have psychiatrists and different things. So this ECHO program with Dr. Sanjeev Arora, that actually invented the program and it's now become world-renowned, I'm so proud of, because it really extends these specialists that really then can, you know, really see in real time, talk to the practitioners and guide them in terms of their medical adjustments and other types of things that a specialist would do, and it's very cost effective. It's almost free. I recognized it the first time I heard his proposal, and I got that money in the budget, and it stayed in the budget.
So what's next for you? Have you thought about that?
You know, I'm not going to go back and have a return performance on the same board. And plus, I'm not a business person anymore. Mm-hmm. So I used to be very involved with the chamber, and as you mentioned, the Loveless Board and the Cancer Center and different things. No, I'm not going to go back and try and start again with those types of boards. But we'll see. I think that I do have a lot to offer with some of the experience that I'm far more capable now than I was when I went in 20 years ago of being able to understand huge budgets, pensions, the importance of the programs that I've been talking about today. And we'll see where that leads me. But I do have a new life, and I am going to really get much more into my art and some of the things that I really haven't been able to really perfect. I used to paint for hours a day before all this came about. And so really when you're working and you come home tired, different things, it's hard to be as, you know, prolific with some of the things that you do. So we'll see. It's all brand new, and it's kind of an exciting. I am going to miss people that I really am fond of and have great respect for, because I know that I'll fall out of touch with a lot of them.
But it sounds like you're looking forward to a change in your life.
I am looking forward to it, especially because I am of the age that I really now need to concentrate on my family, none of which live in town, especially my one and only little granddaughter. And to be able to really, you know, be in touch with them. As you get older, you don't think when you're younger about the importance of your older years and the input and positive relationships that you need to really develop even more than you did when you were younger, because you see the finality of your life. And especially when, you know, as many people know, I lost my husband, and that was really a... it was really a wake-up call as to really spending quality time with people that you love. So okay. That's going to be very important.
Okay. Well, thank you. We hope that you keep us in touch with what you're doing.
Well, thank you very much, and it's always been a pleasure to work with you, and you certainly are the leader in women's issues, and it is very important to continue some of these programs that we talked about, because they are women's issues. Mm-hmm.